Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Rose City Politics. It is August the 31st. Our regular panel tonight includes myself, John Lidke, Doug Sartori, and Don Merrifield Jr. Doug, your background is understated compared to most of them. Is this a real background or is this a Zoom background?
It's a Zoom background, but it is a photograph of a part of my house. That's how I roll.
Okay, there you go. I like it. Don, how are you doing tonight?
I'm very good. I'm very geometrical in my background today.
I like it. We get more of the void, there's depth.
There's like a shadow in the void. Yeah. It's good.
I actually live in three dimensions. It's crazy to believe, but it happens.
It's been 2+ years, but we're finally starting to see different angles of the wall. It's really great. This is the friendships developing, Don.
There's a shadow over there, so I have stuff.
Next week, you might find out what that stuff is. So make sure that you stay tuned in. From here, the show starts to get really good as we get closer and closer to the election. It's also when we get closer and closer to figuring out what Don's stuff is. We are in BizX Magazine online at bizxmagazine.com and on all of your favorite social media and podcasting apps. And Rose City Politics is able to broadcast live on tape thanks to the kind support of Leuna 625, Building Better Communities. We are in an election campaign. We've done our, summary of the candidates. We were doing the week by weeks. We've done the final tally. I'm not going to bother going through it now. If anybody wants to see who's running, head to rosecitypolitics.ca, and we've got links to everyone who's there. We're going to be updating that after we send out some candidate questions. We're doing that tomorrow on the 1st of September. We figured we'd give them the full August in earnest before turning on the Rose City Politics clock. But we are going to, of course, do our newly installed, highly anticipated segment, Die Roller, where we analyze and dissect a ward at random by the Dungeons and Dragons die. We did Ward 4 last week, so it's off of the list. We won't be looking at the mayor's race. That stands on its own. So Doug is going to give us a roll, and if it rolls on 4, he's going to move by. Doug just realized that he's the die roller. He's terrified while I vamp right now. There's no way I could have possibly found it. Good, we're good.
Critical hit. Let's roll a critical hit. Ward 10. Okay.
Oh, we are in it to win it tonight with Ward 10. Some people might think that we are just making this up, but we are not. The die roller is deciding for us how things go. Now, looking at Ward 10, it's not going to be a surprise to anybody. We've spoken a bit about this before. We did at first just see a head-to-head matchup before everything was registered between the incumbent, Jim Morrison, and the prior councillor, Paul Borelli. But then we saw Waleed Wally Chaffchak add himself, nominate himself in, and then Mark Masanovich as well did. So let's take a step back, you guys, and Doug, why don't you give us a little bit of just look at the ward from your perspective and set the table there, and then we can go into a little bit of the politics of it.
Sure thing. So Paul Borelli is a past councillor in this ward. Jim Morrison is the incumbent. Each of them served one term on council. Paul Borelli was the councillor between 2014 and 2018. Wally Chaffchak has run for this seat before. For those who are politically in the know, Wally Chaffchak will be a familiar name. He has been in and around political circles for a very long time in this town, well-known, well-respected, I think has the confidence of many people in his particular ethnic community, which should serve him well. And Mark Masanovich has also run before. What is interesting to me about this, we talked about how difficult it is to defeat an incumbent when you get past a head-to-head race. But when we were looking at a head-to-head race in this ward, this is just not one where I thought that the challenger had much of a shot. Like, I just don't think, I think Paul Borelli's ceiling for votes is not too far away from his share of the vote in 2018, which was 24%. And in a race with fewer than, 7 or 8 candidates, 24% is just never going to cut it. I think Morrison was would have been the heavy favorite in a head-to-head race. This race is more interesting. I do think vote splits make it difficult for a challenger to get over the top. You've got three places where votes will be parked, and Paul Borelli, look, the guy is shameless. You know he's going to have reelect on his signs. He is going to do everything he can to get his vote total up as high as possible, and I expect him to secure a pretty significant minority of votes in the ward. So the difficulty for a challenger is now you have to figure out a way to beat three other people in the ward. So I think though that both Chavchak and Misanovic could be dangerous in this race. And it really depends, I think, on what kind of support Jim Morrison has been able to accumulate over the past 4 years. He himself did not crest 30% of the vote in 2018. So, you know, when you look at incumbents who you have to put a question mark by the strength of their incumbency, Jim Morrison would be one. Now, he's unlike the other incumbent who I'd put a kind of a question mark beside, which we'll save for another day. Jim Morrison has served a full 4 years on council. He has been pretty good at getting media attention. He has been there on some decisive votes and made his presence known and cast the deciding vote in some cases. And I think he was pretty assiduous in making hay out of that stuff. So, you know, Jim Morrison is pretty formidable, but I think it's still an open question. Like, will he get to 40 or 50% of the vote? In this landscape, I think that's going to be difficult. And I think that look, anybody but Morrison is a long shot in this ward, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. And particularly, I want to say that when we talked about what a perfect challenger would look like for a third person who might come into this race, we talked about someone who would be a contrast, represent a contrast from both Borelli and Morrison, and have a tendency to kind of lump Borelli and Morrison into a similar group. And I actually think that although it is a field of four, I think this field kind of accomplishes this. So I'm not prepared to put money on anybody but Morrison winning. I still think that this is likely Morrison's to lose. But you've got to look at that field, and I think there are four candidates there who all can make some noise in different ways, and it could be quite an interesting race.
You know, I'm not going to add much to it, only because we've spoken about this before and you've provided a pretty good level of analysis there. But what I will add is, while on voteborelli.com right now, and I'm looking at his I'm looking at his photographs, and it does indeed say re-elect Paul Borelli, Ward 10 councillor. But then it also says, which I very much enjoy, the platform, serving Ward 10 in the community.
Okay.
Hard stop. Yeah. And then it says Paul Borelli has been a part of South Windsor for many years, working tirelessly to make it a better place.
Does he live in the ward? He didn't when he ran, right?
Let's see what we have down for him. No address listed on the City of Windsor site.
So add a question to our candidate questionnaire. Can you vote for yourself?
That's a good question. Oh, that is great.
So on his website, has he got the City of Windsor logo in his background by any chance?
I believe he's using the photograph with the word Ward 10 strategically photoshopped over the City of Windsor logo. So if you picture that infamous scene with Austin Powers and the tea kettle, you've got a pretty good idea of what I'm looking at here. So he's covering up the city logo, but he must love that picture. Because, yeah, that is the picture he's using.
Yeah, but he also has a photo on his Facebook of him, like on his official page, topless, holding the sun in between his hands, which are outstretched above his head. Anyways, that's too much on this. I don't want to make it seem like we're just dragging on him, because that's a whole episode that we have. Because that's a whole episode we have dedicated coming up.
Yeah. Are we going to do a Borelli episode?
I feel like we could do an entire series of
them. To be fair, we need to have Paul on the show then. Paul Borelli, if you're listening, and I really hope you are, this is your open invitation. You tell us. We will make move heaven and earth and adjust our schedules. You tell us when you can make it for an interview and we will make the time. We want to talk to you, Paul, real bad.
We'll even hold like insulting you back. We'll give you 3 insults against us each. After that, though, we go hard more too.
I've heard a few of Paul's insults about his comments about us. So I look forward to hearing them live.
Yeah, he hasn't been very shy on saying what he feels about us personally.
So No. Well, we're just about at the point that we need to wrap up this segment. Any last thoughts between Don first and then Doug?
Well, I mean, I stated this on a previous show. If Ward 10 does vote for Paul Borelli, I am in full favor of selling Ward 10 to LaSalle. So there's my feelings on it. Jim's been okay, so I don't think it's that horrible. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and I think like it's a good moment to just to follow on what Don is saying. I think that is the power of incumbency. If you're not horrible, you'll probably get reelected. And you know, we've been critical of Jim over the years, but you know, I don't think that I don't think anyone thinks he's a horrible counselor. I don't think that he's even below the average of this council in terms of ability. So you know, he'll probably get reelected because he's good enough.
Good enough is all we hope for.
Good enough ain't bad.
No, it's like, better than bad.
It's in the hierarchy of things, it's like it's not a bad place to be. Don, just give us a quick one too.
I just wanted to switch over to my computer here, so I'm on my other mic now, so my voice sounds much more masculine.
You don't sound like Oscar the Grouch having an aneurysm anymore, so it's much better.
Yeah, I use a lot of processing because that is actually what I usually sound like.
It's all the cigars and just your grumpy demeanor. Okay, let's move forward. We've been following this one as, you know, it's sort of the big overhanging issue of this election, strong mayor powers. We have, you know, learned that it wasn't just now going to be for Ottawa and Toronto, but also expanded to other large and maybe smaller municipalities 1 year after the Ottawa and Toronto pilot is launched. Locally, we've seen some noise be made about this in Kingsville specifically. Council approved at the bequest of Councillor DeYoung bringing forward a motion against special mayor's powers, passing against it. They wanted to send a notice of motion as a petition to the government saying no thank you whatsoever. Again, Bill 3, that is the strong mayor's powers, is titled an act to amend various statutes with respect to special powers and duties of heads of council. It would apply again, as I just said, to Toronto and Ottawa first. If it is enacted, it would give veto powers to the mayor, the ability to appoint the CAO, the ability to hire department heads and create and reorganize departments at will. It would allow for the mayor to appoint committee chairs and local board chairs, so ABCs, and as well would allow for the mayor to add items of provincial priority to the council agenda, creating a situation where a mayor could go and do some horse trading with the premier. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. Let's get something designated down here as a provincial priority. It could be a win-win maybe. It also would demand that if a vacancy shows up, that the mayor be filled through a by-election, not through appointments, which was an interesting quirk of this. Kingsville, as I said, they brought it forward. It passed. The deputy mayor, Gord Queen, called it great, said that their staff was involved in drafting this. A number of councillors expressed concerns about this power, said that they just wanted to get on the public record and make it sure the province knew we don't want it. We don't need to give special powers to mayors. We're not trying to protect anyone, regardless of whether you're mayor or deputy or filling in. And the concern listed here by the deputy mayor is primarily that the mayor would be able to appoint the CAO, and then that CAO would only listen to the mayor. Again, we've joked about these powers and we've just described them as Windsor, Ontario powers over the past like 16 years or so or more, especially as of late with the unceremonious dismissal of Jason Raynard. It's hilarious that we have our own complete data points for this. Let's just stop right there with the Kingsville one. I find it really interesting that they wanted to get ahead of this. They wanted to get this out there on the public record before it passed. I don't think that the timing worked out with that, but regardless, the intention is very clear. They don't want this. Doug, what's your take on them wanting to get out ahead of this?
Well, it's no surprise that the folks who are closest to this policy change would be the ones who are screaming the loudest. Municipal councils, the folks who serve on municipal councils in Ontario are the people who understand the present legislation the best, who understand the balance of authority between mayors and councils, and are, best positioned to express their concern. It's interesting to me and I'm going to go in a couple of directions with this, and I'll start here. It's interesting to me because I think this policy change, this legislation is in line with a lot of what we've seen. You know, it's kind of this this like narrow or bad policy that is hard for the general public to understand, doesn't have an immediate and obvious price tag attached to it. It's not, doing something to you as a citizen or a resident or whatever. It's really hard to get traction with stuff like this. And you can, like, the objections are almost universal. I can't think of any serious non-conservative, like, party member or elected official who has defended this in any kind of a rational way. Side note, while we're throwing down the gauntlet and issuing invitations, I would like to invite to the show either one of our regional PC MPPs, Andrew Dowie and Anthony Liardi. Either of you would love to hear you come on and give your take on why this is important and necessary legislation, if you have a different perspective. But my point stands. In the meantime, nobody likes this. Nobody thinks it's a good idea. Nobody is out there defending it. But we all know it's going to happen. And we all know that the government is going to pay a very minimal political price for it, because it's just not something that is tangible for the general public. And I think it's really unfortunate. I think it's going to take the governance of municipalities in Ontario backwards. It's going to take us to a place where one single individual has far too much authority in every municipality that comes under this rule, under this change. I don't want to steal your thunder, because I know you're going to talk about some of the stuff that Hilda McDonald had to say, but I think that, I think she's right on. I don't trust anybody enough to give them this level of authority over a municipality. No one person should be able to do this much, have this much of an impact on the bureaucracy of a city. And look, like, I just think Windsor has been misgoverned over the past several years. I think that a lot of what you can see as missteps in this city, as policies that either are wrongheaded or don't go far enough, are a result of the bureaucracy essentially listening to one person. And that person, no matter how intelligent they are, they still have a limited perspective, a perspective of one. They are far too easily, one person is far too easily corrupted. This is why we don't just elect one person to run the country. Because it concentrating too much power in one individual is dangerous in a democracy, and we know that. And there is no pressing need, nor is there a justification that holds water for why this change is needed now, and it sucks.
Let me ask you a question. Have you guys heard of any mayor of any city and council who has actually supported this?
Dilkins was pretty equivocal. If you're a mayor and you expect to be reelected, why wouldn't you want this?
Well, the mayor of Ottawa, who actually is not going to be running again, so I guess it's easy if you're an outgoing mayor, has said he doesn't want this and I think their city council today actually kind of did the same thing we're doing down here that Hilda's doing, is sending a letter to the province saying, look, we don't want this, we don't need it, we don't support it. I'm just, it's a,
You know, it'd be interesting, Don, and I just want to, I'd sort of interrupt, but what would be really interesting is if a mayoral candidate ran on not using these powers, even if they were to win and be given them.
Yeah, I was just kind of, while you were talking, scrolling through a CTV story about the Ottawa situation, and they did ask all 12 candidates for mayor, they're having a real party up there, if they, you know, if they wanted these powers. And so far, talking really slow, it only seems to be one out of them who actually supports this. And he stated that only if it was basically a tie at council and, you know, someone had to make the deciding vote, it should be down to the mayor. I don't know what their council makeup is up there. So it seems strange to me that I would be, actually, it's kind of a good test. If your mayor is in favor of this and is really, you know, going off the deep end saying, yeah, we need this, yeah, we want this, that would probably be very concerning to any town that has a mayor that wants these kind of powers. Because I just, this is going to go through, like Doug said, and the practical aspect of it, I'd be curious to see what mayors actually do use this power they're giving. And if they did, if there wouldn't be some huge political pushback next time an election comes around.
Well, and I think that's what municipal councilors need to think about. If I were advising a municipal councilor in this new reality, my suggestion would be that you really need to test the limits. You really need to push back against this, because otherwise, why do you even have the job? If all you're going to be is a rubber stamp for the mayor, again, this is the reality that we've basically lived in for many years in Windsor, and it's not good, and it does not lead to good outcomes. If all you're going to be is a rubber stamp for the mayor, and you're going to wear every stupid thing that the mayor does and not have any real influence or power to change it, why even serve? So I think it would be wise for councillors to really push against this and be very active and vocal in pushing against it once it comes down.
And just, yeah, but think how cool the parties for the cool people are up in like Toronto or Kitchener, Waterloo and stuff. Like those parties have to be really good.
100%.
You're not going to get the good jar of cocaine if you are if you're against these powers.
So just to update my previous statement, as Doug was speaking again, I was scrolling. There actually are about four candidates who are all in favor of the strong mayor thing up in Ottawa. And one of them is just madly in love with it. So, yeah, don't vote for that guy because he's terrifying even as a response. So, I guess there are some candidates who are all on board on this thing.
He's already picking his shade of brown envelope, Don.
Exactly.
Well, I like the light tan.
Yeah, it's going to be made of Corinthian leather. It's going to be beautiful. It's reusable. It's very environmental. So I'm going to go. If this was just narrowed down to strictly the housing thing, and of course everybody's going to accuse me of being a real estate guy, so obviously I'm going to get some pushback on this. I can almost understand it because, using Windsor as an example, I mean, some of our strongest proponents here of urbanization would probably be a lot of people who live in Ward 4, the Walkerville area. And the first time that they propose some kind of multi-residential development in Walkerville, everybody loses their mind, and now they're pushing back against it and going to the OMB or whatever it's called now to try and stall the development. So I can see on one hand, if a city needs, especially like Toronto, I mean, Toronto is a different case than Windsor, but a place like Toronto where they actually need development, not outside the city, more so inside the city in residential areas, it's pretty easy for councillors to kind of get pushed around by the powers that be in their specific ward that would kind of make them vote against what would probably be in the best interest of a whole city. So, I mean, I can almost see it. That the problem I have is they went, 13 steps further and said, they can appoint CEOs, they can fire people and that kind of stuff. If it was just strictly the development thing, I would be 50-50 on it right now.
But there was a housing task force. There was a housing task force that made like literally dozens of recommendations, and we've tried none of those before going to strong mayor powers, well, that, which has a tenuous fucking connection.
They took the title of the housing task force and they used it.
Fair.
And they took the target that we needed to get to. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot that could have just, all of this could have been done through changing the Planning Act. The housing task force, it came back, it said, intensify development along transit routes, allow for more infill, allow for more multi-unit, allow for more densification, allow for more height, get rid of the obstacles that stand in the way. Instead, we've got, dictatorial mayor powers, and it went the complete opposite way. I look to it as, let's say it's Chris Holt who wins and he gets the strong mayor powers. And he goes, I'm going to go and turn Windsor into an affordable housing playground. We're putting our money there. We're going to get it all done. I could see a premier like Ford going, that doesn't fit with my plan, though, of having presumably connected developers, connected construction. It might not align with the provincial priorities. You know what, Windsor, you're not going to get the strong mayor powers right now. Those aren't for you. I could actually see more so, Don, the flip side of what you were saying with a Holt, but rather a Dilkins coming in and using these powers to block affordable housing developments that were passed by council, because someone like him would go, no, that's too much money. It's too fast. It's too radical. It's too ridiculous to do something like that. We need to be prudent with our investments, blah, 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 blah.
Is it both risky and radical, John?
And I think that's the best kind of thing.
It's two of the three R's.
And I will just say before we move on, because we've got a lot here to get through, still on this topic, I did ask all the mayoral candidates about this. Chris Holt did come back. He said it's an affront to democracy. It diminishes the role and responsibility of councillors. He goes on to say a lot more, but pretty clear what he thinks of it. Benjamin Daniluk says it depends on who the mayor would be. So that's a pretty good straddling issue. Then he goes on to say
I would be a fine god emperor.
If it's me, I would be the greatest king in the world. My subjects would love me, but those other losers, no way.
Arguably better responses than Ernie Lamont and Aaron Day, who didn't respond yet. And I have yet
forward Ernie's response.
I still need to send out, I left him a voicemail message. He didn't get back to me. So Ernie, maybe it's because I didn't call you Bacon Man on the phone, but get back to me, please.
It's flip phone. It's star 67, I think.
Okay, let's move forward to the next point. The AMO has called for more consultations on this. That's not a surprise. They said that, Doug, what you just indicated, small cities, good with this, against this, big cities, you typically okay with it. They told the legislative committee government you should be consulting the public, professional and municipal political organizations. I interviewed Mayor Hilda McDonald from Leamington about this yesterday or the day before. She was just reelected to the AMO board of small urban caucuses. And she said, if you have someone who represents a special interest group and that one person comes in, they can decimate the top layer of admin. That's not how democracy works. I'm not in favor. She's really concerned about an unscrupulous leader who would run roughshod. She said that that reshaping of staff could potentially mean a loss of talent who don't remain consistently because they only answer to one person. And if that person gets upset, well, they might not keep their job. And then she said, and then who gets those jobs after that point? So yes, she's really concerned about this, this king type role. Believe she even went so far as to define it as tyrannical. Listen to the audio on AM800's website. Let me know if I'm wrong with that. It was an early morning interview, but I don't feel out of line saying that. And I was the one who conducted the interview. So you have here saying this. What I found most interesting about it was I had read the line from the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing. He said, when this was introduced, I sent a letter to every head of council. And I went, hey, Mayor McDonald, you're a head of council. What was the letter? And she went, I never got an email about this whatsoever. And so it's like, wow, the first piece that we're getting on this out of the minister's office is, as offside as you can get from the head of a council who's saying, no, he didn't. It's a literal he said, she said. I'm going to believe the one who is, on the phone with me talking about the problems, not pushing something that no one can seemingly defend on its merits. Last thoughts on strong mayors, Doug?
Yeah. So I thought Mayor McDonald's comments were quite interesting. And, I'm very concerned about this because I think at the end of the day, there is just not enough public interest in municipal politics for us to get consistently quality representation. And that may sound like a dig on municipal representatives, and I don't mean it to be. What I mean to say is that there is just not enough public scrutiny of politics at the municipal level for the public in any one municipality to be able to reliably elect one person to run the show. There just isn't. And I can see why the small urban caucus would be particularly concerned, because in smaller centers especially, there is virtually no coverage of local municipal politics. Hardly anybody knows what's going on. And I think it's just you combine a lot of power with little scrutiny, and you're going to get corruption. You're going to get shitty stuff. Do we want shitty stuff in Ontario? We don't want shitty stuff. That's why this is a bad thing.
So you want Made in Windsor Solutions across the whole province? Oh. This is how you get Made in Windsor Solutions across all of Ontario. But Doug, it sounds cynical what you're suggesting, but I don't know why anyone might think that. This government would take advantage of the lowest voter turnout in Ontario history, 43.5%, the most recent provincial election. And to put that in context with Windsor last time around, 35% overall. Yeah, so yeah, people aren't paying attention.
The second term in a row where Premier Ford wins a majority without saying boo about municipalities in the election. And then within months after the election makes radical change to the way municipalities are governed. In the case of the 2018 election, it was slashing the size of Toronto City Council. In the case of this election, it is the strong mayor legislation. It's a pile of garbage. Local PC MPPs, come on the show and tell us why we're wrong.
Don't forget about canceling the regional elections of Peel and Vaughan. Right.
Of course.
To kneecap Patrick Brown and Stephen Del Duca as well. Because there was so much that happened at one quick time. Everyone was looking over at Toronto and not looking at the regionals.
Yep.
Don, last thoughts.
Last thoughts, kind of reiterating what I said before. If this was strictly about development in a place like Toronto, and maybe Ottawa has the same issues, I can see it. I can understand why they would do it, because they can't get anything built multi-res in residential areas up there because the outrage from everybody, the NIMBYs who don't want it in their backyard, and whether they like it or not, they need it. And I can understand that the local councilor will get pushed around and would be afraid to do anything. So I don't see we have that problem here. If we ran into that problem where trying to get, a condo building or an apartment building approved in a residential area, we got huge pushback and it took years. I can see the rationale and the reasoning behind it. I don't think this is the answer, but I could see the reasoning behind it. So we haven't really run into that problem. Most of our developments get approved eventually, even with, the 13 people whining that their sunset's going to be ruined. But in a bigger city, maybe they have, I know Toronto has big problems. I don't know about Ottawa. But I don't think this is the answer. I think everyone loves a dictator until it's not your dictator. And then everybody's attitude changes. And I'm sure if the NDP were in power and they said, we're going to give all our mayor buddies who are also NDP members powers to, basically take my job of being king. There would be huge pushback from the conservatives. So it seems like a weird way to go. They're trying to solve a problem that is a real problem in probably, in my opinion, a pretty dumb way. There's easier ways to do this, especially making zoning changes a lot easier for municipalities. And even, if residents come and complain 37 times that, I don't want that building in my backyard, well, maybe you get the complaint once and then you go away. There's a way to speed up the process, I think, that doesn't involve making your mayor a dictator.
Yeah, and my last thoughts are going to be, if Chris Holt and Andrea Horvath win their elections in Windsor and Hamilton, ain't no way in hell that they're ever going to be allowed to have strong mayor powers. That's my prediction, and so I'd love to be proven wrong.
Yeah, and if I just – one more point, I guess I made it four, but I will find it hard to believe, even if this goes through, that any city actually uses this.
Oh, they absolutely will, Don. Maybe not the veto, but controlling administration, that's the real power.
No, the administration thing, yeah, I think that's bullshit, and that has to go, 100%. But I don't know, it's – yeah.
Setting the budget? Sure. You see a mayor that won't say, I get to unilaterally set the budget. I get to determine every priority. I get to run re-election because I know that nothing that I don't want will be coming my way. And everything I choose is my agenda.
I think that's a one-shot thing, because after you do that and piss everybody off, if you piss everybody off by doing stupid stuff, you won't get elected again.
We could get a nice town clown.
Well, it'd be fun and great for our show for 4 years, but I think let's just, I know I don't want to extend this topic, but let's just use our mayor as an example. If he starts acting more so as a dictator than he does now, in my opinion, and starts making a lot of dumber decisions that pisses off a lot of people, I don't think he'd get elected again.
He'd just get a bigger podium, Don. More tax inserts.
We'll go on to the next topic.
Few rides in the Batmobile.
That's right, yeah. I don't think he wants to see me on the news anymore, so he'd probably be afraid at that point.
Let's test that.
We will try. Okay, let's move on to our last topic of the night. It's a fun one for us, not a great one for the state of democracy. We're going to be ending on a Drew Dilkins tweet honoring the chief of our fire and rescue services, Stephen LaFerrette. Drew Dilkins writes, for his tireless work in keeping our community safe and for going above and beyond at the height of the pandemic, it was my honor to present Stephen LaFerrette, Chief of Fire and Rescue Services, with a key to the city, accompanied with two photographs, one of him with the chief standing in front of Engine One, holding up a really nice framed City of Windsor seal with a pandemic photo, a tribute, and a gold key there at the bottom. It's a really nice piece put together well. And then the second photo, I kid you not, seems to be entirely comprised of the crew of what I presume to be Fire Hall 1 in Windsor, all standing with the upper brass as well. And Mayor Dilkins in the center, everyone smiling, wide mouthed open.
And but like you are right now?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like, we've talked about podiums on the show and using the office in the pre-campaign period.
In his defense, he didn't use a podium in this picture.
No, he didn't. Not in this one. He's playing a game of podiums and keys now. It's the worst snakes and ladders game that I've heard of. But this transition out of using the formal office before the campaign period to, you know, do the things that we all saw him doing, tax bill insert, whatnot, to now seeing in an earnest election campaign, using the office, conferring honorifics, posing for what appear to arguably be campaign photos. I love the wording. Thank you for going above and beyond at the height of the pandemic. One, you know, the pandemic's still going on here. As much as we don't have restrictions, it still exists. We just had our medical officer of health say the fall's going to be really bad. Two, I love the coincidental timing that, you know, if the height of the pandemic was, you know, a year ago, here we are, August 30th, you know, very important city work time, not a time that most people usually go on holidays or anything. It just happened to be in a campaign period. It just happenstance that this is all happening right now. Doug, what's your thoughts about these totally random coincidences that keep happening?
So what's amazing to me, I have so many thoughts about this. The first thing I want to say is what's amazing to me is that the The unofficial reelection campaign that's being run through the mayor's office is far more active than the actual reelection campaign of Mayor Dilkins. As far as I know, there has not been one peep out of that campaign yet. Last time I looked, the website was a placeholder with a picture of a like a logo or an election sign or something on it and nothing else. There has not been one iota of information or campaigning coming from candidate Dilkins. But Mayor Dilkins is doing everything he can to help his buddy candidate Dilkins get reelected. I don't know how much more transparently sleazy this has to get before it starts to be something that is a problem for the mayor. This is just lousy. I guess like the problem is whenever you start to have these conversations, people are going to play the game of, well, what about this and what about that? And every elected government does things and uses its powers to help tweak things in favor of reelection. And that's true. You know, that is the nature of elected politics, that one of the things that elected people will do with their authority is try to tilt the scales in their favor at election time. And all I can say to that is that it's a matter of, it's a matter of judgment. It's a matter of taste. Everybody has to draw the line where they think is appropriate. I'm certainly not alleging that anything illegal or even against any rules is happening. It's just inappropriate and sleazy. It's just, that's just what it is. And that's my judgment. That's my personal political judgment on it. And everybody is, it's up to everyone to make their own judgment. Now, and look, politicians are going to politician, and the pushback has been relatively limited, so it's not that surprising that the mayor is unscrupulous enough to do this kind of thing on the public dime. It's crappy, but there it is. But let's talk about the chief of the Fire and Rescue Service. It's one thing if you run a charity or are a prominent business person and the mayor says, hey, picks up the phone and someone from the mayor's office says, hey, we'd like to give you the key to the city. We'd like to do a photo thing. Would you be okay with that? That's one thing. And people, I can totally understand why people would be either clueless, like not plugged into politics enough to understand what was happening, or just don't care because they don't care because they're going to get honored by the city and they're going to, that's a thing that they wanted and good for them. Like they've all probably done good work. I'm sure that Mr. Laferrette has done great work at the Fire and Rescue Service. I've never heard a bad word about them. However, if you are a municipal employee and the mayor's office reaches out to you during the election period and says, hey, we'd like to give you the key to the city, and we'd like to do a photo op with the mayor, and won't that be great? Don't you think the appropriate response is, I would be happy to, on October 25th? Don't you think the appropriate response is to say, let's book that for November, Mr. Mayor? I just think that it's unfortunate that the chief has chosen to do this. Like, it's hard to see, not to see it as wading into politics, and it's hard not to see that a municipal employee would not be attuned to what this means and what it looks like. And it's really unfortunate that this is the way it's gone down.
It just looks so gross. It's from brutal. Every vantage point. There isn't one that makes it look defensible.
Now, just to play devil's advocate to myself, do you think that that this is normal mayoral conduct, and that we're just being because of the environment and because of what has transpired with the tax inserts and the billboard with the mayor's, thank you healthcare workers and inexplicably a picture of the mayor on it? Do you think that is just for those of us who are tuned in and plugged in, do you think that that's just made us too sensitive to this sort of thing, and that this is just normal mayor business and we're being unreasonable? Don?
No. Well, I think if this was a one-off, yeah, maybe we're being sensitive about it, but it's not a one-off. And again, while you're speaking, I'm scrolling away here. College president, St. Clair College president, Patty France just got one on August 24th, which was a week ago. So apparently everybody's getting a key to the city who's important.
How many keys to the city were distributed prior to August 2022?
you know, city security. Oh. You can't just give keys out to everybody. At least have a lockbox.
Wow, we have a FOIA. That's very interesting. Absolutely. What a great question, Doug. When did we get all these keys made? Were these just sitting around in a box, or were these all decided to be printed up in the last 4 to 6 months potentially?
Good question.
It's so interesting to see this being done. Yeah, August 26th. Thank you so much. You gave for the hard work to Sebastian Perrone, City Hall staff for a number of years. He didn't get a key in that case there, though. We all see this for what it is. And even if, Doug, like, I'll play your game about it. Like, even if we are just so normalized and demoralized by these constant actions, and maybe we are the only ones who notice and who comment on it, you know, it doesn't make it right. It still remains wrong. And it's just embarrassing that this is the type of thing that goes for politics in this city. It could be so much damn better, but instead we get this bottom of the barrel bullshit spoon fed to us week after week after week, and we start to feel like we're the ones going fucking insane, but we're not. It's everyone else for not noticing it.
So just to add some context here, I am Googling again, and since 2014, Drew Dilkins has awarded a key to former mayor Eddie Francis, the Lancers women's basketball team in 2015. Dennis Soleil, I don't know who he is, in 2015, but congratulations. Commander of some boat in 2016, man who fought for the SS Scottish Regiment, 2017 World War II, good on ya. 2018, president of, all these people seem to like have accomplished things and then are receiving something after the fact. Nobody gave Mayor Francis the key to the city while he was mayor. So it seems odd to me that in this situation, the head of fire service is getting awarded with something before his tenure and paycheck from the city is over.
Is that a complete list you're looking at, Don?
It's right on Mayor Dilkins' thing. It says key to the city, blah, blah, blah.
So this is, so in 2015, there were two.
2015, there were two. 2014 was one. 16 was one. 17 was one. 18 was one. And then last year, Cam Gardner, who used to work at AM800.
Okay. So one or two per year, and we've had three in a week.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, my comment was, if this was a one-off, if this was like, you know, the Cam Gardner situation, he, you know, was obviously, you know, battling some illnesses at the time. And so fair enough. I don't think the head of the fire service is battling cancer or anything, and I could be wrong. And what happens if, you know, 3 weeks from now he decides, you know, he gets a call that there's a cat up in a tree, and instead of climbing up there, he decides to shoot a water cannon at it. And now we decide he's not a good person. Do we take the key back? Do we change the locks? What do we do?
Is a procedure to change the locks of the city. Yes. It's a very formal procedure, the changing of the locks.
It is such a good point, though, that you bring up of, you know, a current employees receiving these types of honors. And, you know, I guess, you know, the devil's advocate is, you guys, I didn't even give out one of these in 2019 or in 2020. And then, 2021, there was one, and I had to catch up on all the COVID ones. So these aren't really keys to the city. These are COVID keys to the city. They've been cleaned. Don't worry. We don't have to keep 6 feet apart to open up the lock.
Yeah, they smell like Lysol.
But it's the old City of Windsor sanitizer that we still have sitting in a shed somewhere.
That illegal sanitizer that we were giving away?
Oh, my God.
I got a bottle of that, by the way. It's fantastic. It's very tasty with the DAC.
One day when the trauma subsides, we have to do a pandemic recap of all the ridiculous shit that went down during the pandemic. The sanitizer one, and picking a fight with the federal government because we didn't properly label our hand sanitizer, has got to be like a highlight. It's right up there with taking a trip to Jordan at the start of the pandemic.
Yes, being out of reach. I know you're all dying back there, but I'm on vacay, so cut me some slack for a week.
You should see it out here. It's gorgeous.
That's right. Just stop licking door handles for 2 weeks, and I'll be back, and I'll fix everything.
It's just awful that it's so clearly laid out, even here on, you know, MayorDrewDilkins.ca's website, not on DrewDilkins.reelect.ca's website, but on Mayor Drew Dilkins. And I guess this is the positive, though, of having Drew Dilkins and Andrew Ray, is that there can be this handing off during these types of tumultuous situations where one can take cover for the other.
You know, so, I really think that the key to the city is unfortunately being politicized and cheapened. And maybe at Rose City Politics, we should institute some alternative, like the back door to the city or the city cat door, or I don't know, you know, some alternative form of ingress that can represent, you know, a little bit more of a respectable look at the people who deserve to be honored in this city.
Rose City Politics, come in our back door. That'll be our slogan. That's
what
we're gonna go with.
Yes.
Well, I was just gonna say, Don, if you still have that hand sanitizer, it could be like the hand sanitizer that squeaks the wheel, or like that, we can apply the lubricant in one way.
Oh, you had to go that way. I thought you were going to go with the backdoor comment.
I did say lubricant.
You
so
did,
I mean,
and
like,
just, I was so hopeful that you were going to keep it classier than I do here, and you failed miserably.
Why should I play that game?
So, yeah, I don't know. It seems very odd to me. Like, again, between 2018 and now, he gave out one, and that was the Cam Gardner. Well-deserved. Cam Gardner was a great Windsor guy. It makes everything feels ugly about this. It's just so blatant and callous that this is just blatant campaigning. Like, what's the head of the fire department now supposed to go, yeah, thanks for the key, but, you know, when the mayor leaves, you go, yeah, I'm not voting for that loser. Is he really going to say that? You're almost pressuring them that they have to vote for the mayor now. It's, I don't know, this whole thing makes me feel dirty and I need a shower.
Well, and I can't wait for the comments. Rose City Politics shits on fire department, says they're all terrible, terrible at their job. And because, like, that's how it's going to be construed by anyone who opposes us. And that's, of course, not at all what we said. It's just an unfortunate situation. Doug, as you said, the politicization of so many institutions in this body of our politics, that is Windsor, now down to the key to the city itself.
I mean, well, that, what Doug said is right. It cheapens the whole thing, because now it's not going to mean as much to the next person that gets it, if they're deserving. You know, I'm sure next will be David Mugey will get one, or, you know, one of the guys, Abe Tack will get six. So, yeah, it just cheapens the whole thing, and it's kind of sad.
Well, we do have a month and a half left of an election campaign period, so there's a number of days left on to be giving out keys. There's a potential for one a week for the next 8 to 9 weeks. So
we should have a key count.
It's a new section on the website. Imagine if it does actually go above five, though. And like, if this is us going, look at the state of affairs, it's terrible. We're at two already in 2 weeks. And if it's actually going to be like five, six, or seven in the actual.
So I don't know the process. Is this literally just the mayor arbitrarily decides, or is there any kind of formal process for
who knows, man?
Who knows?
Why is this even coming up? Is the moral of the story? Like, why are we even having to discuss this?
How did the mayor's thing get into the tax bill? Nobody knows. It's the city of Windsor where the bylaws are made up and they really don't matter anyways.
45-year-old Wisers. Loops a lot of tax bills.
And folks, it's Rose City Politics for you. We've been able to go through a show here in about exactly the amount of time and with about as much of the crass as we had allotted to it. So we've reached our limit. We do have to contractually pull the plug on this episode. It's been a lot of fun. We're going to keep up with our Die Roller segment as we move forward, only because it sounds like such a good German word. If there's a German word that is close to Die Roller and it has nothing to do with elections or dice rolling, don't let me know. But if it has something to do with like the murder roller, as it sounds like it would directly translate to, I want to know everything
about it. It's how the Germans figure out who gets the key to the city.
The die roller. It's like, hey, the die tells all.
Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.